Few things do people seek as much as they seek healing, to be healed. Whether it's maladies of the body, maladies of the soul, strife of the spirit or sickness of the heart, people are spending money and time and so much effort to be healed. But we know that one of the most difficult yet meaningful ironies and complexities and oxymorons that we must grasp in our life is to realize and deeply comprehend that healing can never come from running away or avoiding the pain, the sickness. As much as we might try and try and try, distracting oneself from pain, distracting oneself from challenges, can never bring about a resolution. But rather, healing can only come from dealing with and having a tool to be able to rectify the issue. And sometimes people will do anything other than try to actually deal with the issue head on, because sometimes it's just so painful to deal with the pain directly. It's just so much easier to try to numb, or as Pink Floyd said, to become comfortably numb by distracting ourselves and running away to other things, which is of course why probably one of the only industries that makes more than the medical industry is the entertainment industry. Because we do anything to be able to just make it go away. We do anything to be able to just take the blue pill, wake up in our beds, and just continue living as if we have no issues with us. We don't want to go down that rabbit hole that comes from the red pill. The red pill that's necessary to take for real healing. By facing the issue, facing it head on, and facing the pain, and learning not just to live with it, but to redeem it, and to understand how to come about true healing. And it's difficult. You know, I heard once from a chassid, Lubavitcher Chassid, who said that when he was a bacher, when he was a young man, and you know, the young men, when the Lubavitcher Rebbe used to come to 770, the young men, the Chassidim, used to run away. They didn't want the Rebbe to look at them, because everyone knows young men don't always have the most pure and pristine check sheets and the types of thoughts and everything. And a chassid believed that the Rebbe was able to look at you and see all your problems, all your issues, all the sins you've done, anything you did. And everyone would run away, that the Rebbe shouldn't look at them. And this one chassid told me that he used to always make sure to stand right in front of the Rebbe, right in front of the Rebbe's field of vision. And some of the other people asked him, "Aren't you embarrassed? Aren't you embarrassed to stand like that right in front of the Rebbe, that the Rebbe should see you with everything that you have, with all your flaws and your iniquities, etc. Aren't you embarrassed?" And he said that he responded, "Yeah, but you know, when you go to a doctor, you have to get naked. As embarrassing as it is, you have to show the doctor the pain. You have to show the doctor the what could be very often ugly lesion or wound or sore or whatever you could use your imagination. You have to show it to the doctor. You have to be able to show and face the ailment. It's embarrassing, but it's necessary." And therefore, and that's true when it comes to tzaddikim, but it's also true for ourselves when we want to be our own doctors. We have to face that pain and be able to realize how to heal and redeem it. And I believe that there's something in the poetry of Rav Kook, there's something so deep and profound and magnificent that could heal in such an amazing way pain. Not necessarily heal in the conventional way that most people would think healing means, but heal in the truest way. Redeem suffering in the deepest and truest way. Now, you know that in Rav Kook's poetry, one of the most prevalent themes that Rav Kook sings about in his poems again and again and again is his yearning and longing for God. He sings so much, he has so many poems about his deep, passionate longing and desire, his yearning and his unquenchable love for God. And of course, it goes without saying that it's not just in Rav Kook's poetry, and it's not just love of God. There's probably no theme that's more prevalent in so many songs and movies and books and paintings and art, like the theme of longing and desire and love. As Rabbi Elazar Azkari writes, the Charedim, he writes that it is the way of one who desires to sing. Derech ha-choshek l'shoirer. It is the way of one who desires to sing. Because you understand that speech is the soul's expression. And although there are myriads of ways for the soul to reveal itself and express itself, song, poetry, is the sweetest of them all. Because a soul full of love is a sweet soul, and a sweet soul expresses itself with song. And even the deepest, most bitter songs of loss and heartbreak and yearning are also only possible from that soul that tasted the sweetness of love and lost it. Which, of course, is why Tennyson wrote that it is better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all, because love sweetens the soul. And then whether one actually has that love still or has lost it, when that soul expresses itself, it will come out as song, as poetry. Or as one of, if not the greatest poets of all time, Shakespeare wrote at the beginning of Twelfth Night, "If music be the food of love, play on. Give me excess of it, that surfeiting, the appetite may sicken and so die." Just sing songs of love that I should be able to get out that huge love within me that's causing me such pain. And so therefore, all the great souls of history have sang songs of love, have written poetry about love and yearning and loss, etc. But I think that Rav Kook, in his poetry, in his songs and poetry of longing, there's something much, much deeper. I believe that Rav Kook wrote so many poems about yearning, about the pain of longing, of passionate desire for God, not just because he wanted to express a sweetness, and not just because he wanted to surfeit an excess and get rid of that pain of longing, but he has an element of healing. There's a healing in the poetry of Rav Kook that he's trying to convey, not just for those that are on fire with love of God, but for all of us that need healing. To explain this, as I said, there are many, many poems from Rav Kook about longing. But we're going to learn two by way of example, one now and one later on, because I think they hold the key of how we, people that seemingly many of us are not exactly constantly yearning and longing and desiring God, but I think these poems hold the key of how Rav Kook's poetry of yearning can and will help us heal from so much pain. So listen, we will begin with a poem that was published in the first collection of Rav Kook's poetry that was ever in print. It was printed in 1945 in an issue of the Hebrew periodical Sinai by Aleph Mem Haberman. It was poems that were given to him by Rav Tzvi Yehuda, the son of Rav Kook, the first time his poems were ever published. The name of the poem is "My Soul Pines." My soul pines for the supernal light, for the light infinite, for the light of the God of truth, the God of my life, the living God, the life of the universe. The longing devours my strength of body and spirit, for I have not the capacity, nor have I been prepared to provide for the fulfillment and still this great longing. I prostrate myself profusely before the sovereign of all worlds, whose hand is open to satisfy every living thing with favor. Satiate my desire, and satiate me with the light of your splendor. Satisfy my thirst for your light. Shine your face, and I shall be saved. And this is just one example of a Rav Kook poem about longing, about being devoured body and spirit, all his strength being devoured with this thirst for the eternal light of God, this seemingly insatiable, unstoppable, constant longing for God's infinity, to the extent that Rav Kook needs to beg God to shine his face, to save us, to bring salvation. It could only be satiated by God. We don't have the capacity to provide for the fulfillment and satiate this great longing. And this is just an example, but there are many, many poems like this. And when I see these poems, and we have to realize the first thing that strikes us, and again, this is just one, but there are literally tens and tens, is that Rav Kook never writes a poem about actually reaching that what he is longing for. There doesn't seem to ever be a denouement, a final scene, a final reaching of what it is that Rav Kook has been so longing for. So of course, the obvious answer is, okay, because the Messiah hasn't come, Mashiach didn't come, and until that happens, there never will be a quenching of this thirst. But I think that that's too simplistic an answer. I think the fact that Rav Kook is writing so much about the actual passionate thirst is because that also is the key for the quenching of that thirst. I think Rav Kook is trying to teach us that the thirst itself, the longing itself, the struggle itself, the challenge itself, the journey itself, the struggle itself, is all worth singing about, because through singing about it, one is able to be healed from it, by it. What do I mean to say? So in order to be able to understand what I think the key of Rav Kook is presenting here in his poetry, I would like to share with you two other poems, two secular poems by two of the most beautiful poets that have ever lived. But before I do, before we read these other poems, I would like to ask you to try to reflect for a moment about the absolute worst feeling or experience you think is ever possible to have. Take a moment to think, whether you had it or not, or you think others have had it, or you have had it. What would you say if I were to ask you, what is the absolute worst feeling that there could possibly be? The worst, most painful experience that there could ever be. And I've asked this many times when I've spoken about this idea. So some people will right away say physical pain, things like that, which of course is horrible, horrible pain. We're not here to give grades and stuff. But I think most people, when thinking a little deeper than that, will go deeper and say that physical pain, while kabinish dogadach, nobody should know from any pain, but while it could be horrible, that's not the worst feeling or experience that there is. The absolute worst, worst pain is not physical pain. It's pain of the soul. And people have given answers that the worst feeling that there could be is the feeling of loneliness, the pain of rejection, of betrayal, being betrayed. People have said the feeling of shame, embarrassment, of loss, of meaninglessness, the feeling of heartbreak, the experience of being used, being abused. These all are horrible experiences, and these are usually the answers that people say when they're forced to say, what's the worst feeling or experience that there is? But I believe, if we think a little deeper, I believe that at the root of all of these feelings is one word, which interestingly, the few times I've given this class, people have never said. But at the root of all these horrible, horrible feelings of loneliness, rejection, shame, heartbreak, meaninglessness, abuse, there's one word which really is the source, the root, and the real being of all of those feelings and experiences. And I will get to it shortly, but first let's read these two other poems. And notice that these two poems that we're going to read are actually opposites from each other. They're opposite themes. The first poem we're going to read is from the great Edna St. Vincent Millay, a landsman, a poet from Long Island. This is a poem from Edna St. Vincent Millay known as The Dream, which, let me preface, is actually in the poem, is sort of like a nightmare. And notice as we read the poem that this dream, this nightmarish dream, how it's resolved so quickly and easily upon waking up, and what resolves, what brings that resolution of this nightmare. Listen. Love, if I weep, it will not matter, and if you laugh, I shall not care. Foolish am I to think about it, but it is good to feel you there. Love, in my sleep I dreamed of waking. White and awful, the moonlight reached over the floor, and somewhere, there was a shutter loose. It screeched, swung in the wind, and no wind blowing. I was afraid and turned to you, put out my hand to you for comfort, and you were gone, cold, cold as dew. Under my hand, the moonlight lay. Love, if you laugh, I shall not care. But if I weep, it will not matter. Ah, it is good to feel you there. What matters crying? What matters laughter? What matters all of this? It is good to feel you there. The presence of the beloved is the ultimate resolution of the nightmare. The nightmare was when, and you were gone, cold as dew, under my hand, there was only the moonlight. The nightmare of loss, that you're not there anymore, your presence isn't there. But then when I wake up, I could just laugh at that also. Ah, it is good to feel you there. When the presence of the beloved is close, then I could laugh, I could cry, it does not matter. Or I guess you could sort of paraphrase this poem in an with the lyrics of an earlier song, for all you Clue fans out there. Life could be a dream, shaboom. If I could take you up in a paradise up above, if you would tell me I'm the only one that you love, life could be a dream, sweetheart. Shaboom. That's the poem of Edna St. Vincent Millay, the poem all about presence. Listen to this poem now from one of the greatest romantic poets, Dante Gabriel Rossetti, from his House of Life. The name of the poem, the sonnet, is Without Her. Listen as he reflects on all the different things in the house and all the different things outside that are meaningless without her, starting with the glass, the mirror. He goes through the different things in the bedroom and then remembering going outside and the paths he used to go with her. Listen to the poem. What of her glass without her, the blank gray? There where the pool is blind of the moon's face. Her dress without her, the tossed empty space of cloud rack where the moon has passed away. Her paths without her, day's appointed sway, usurped by desolate night. Her pillowed place without her, tears on me for love's good grace and cold forgetfulness of night or day. What of the heart without her? Nay, poor heart, of thee what word remains ere speech be still? A wayfarer by barren ways and chill, steep ways and weary, without her thou art, where the long cloud, the long wood's counterpart, sheds double darkness up the laboring hill. What's the theme of this poem? Her mirror without her, her clothing, her dress, the empty space where the moon has passed away. By the way, interesting, notice the moon appears both in this and in the St. Vincent Millay's poem, because the moon waxes and wanes. Keep that in mind. So her dress without her, the mirror without her, the paths we used to go on without her, and then at night her pillowed place without her brings tears on me for love's good grace. And the heart without words without her, and all the steps, the barren ways without her. The theme of this poem is emptiness. Emptiness, the opposite of presence. Emptiness versus presence. Of course, what better symbolizes that than the moon, which can be empty or present? And now I would like you to think back to all those worst feelings or experiences that there could ever possibly be, and realize how they all have at their root emptiness. Whether it's loneliness, or heartbreak, or rejection. That pain, that incomparable heartbreak, pain, loneliness, is a desolate, horrible, dry emptiness. The feeling of loss, of death, of losing a loved one, either by death or other ways of loss, is a gaping hole, an emptiness. Betrayal is an emptiness of who you thought you could trust, who you put all your, that basket in whom you put all your apples. Meaninglessness is emptiness when life feels empty. Even when one feels used, it feels abused. The pain of abuse is the pain of feeling that one is empty of all worth. Shame, being empty of worth, empty of self. And the more that you meditate, and sometimes it's necessary to do so, to bring healing, as we said, the more that we meditate on the worst feelings and experiences, you'll see that they all have at their root emptiness, which is the opposite of the presence about which Edna St. Vincent Millay is singing, that causes that weeping does not matter and laughter I shall not care. That feeling of emptiness is the root of all pain and suffering, which is actually absolutely incredible. Because anyone that ever learned any Kabbalah or Hasidic philosophy knows that the very first step that God did in the process of creating the world was that He brought about a state of emptiness, of a halal. You see, the Kabbalah explains that for there to be a world, for there to be the possibility of creation, the first thing God needed to do in the process of creation was bring about a moment of absolute emptiness. He did tzimtzum. He concealed completely and radically any revelation of His presence at all, and He made what the Kabbalah calls the chalal u'mokim panui, the void, the empty space. And only in that void and empty space, a void empty of His light, radically and completely empty of any of His light, could there then be the creation of the world, when He once again brought back a little drop, a concealed ray of His light. But it all of reality takes place in that place of emptiness, of void, of blank, gray, empty space. Creation is only in the desolate night, without God, a cold forgetfulness, barren and chill. Only in that darkness of emptiness could there be creation. Because when God wanted to create the world, there was no quote-unquote place possibility. When there's the presence of God, there can't be a world, because God's infinite presence overwhelms. So there has to be emptiness. And therefore He contracts His light to the sides and makes this vacated, empty space where all time and space can come into existence. And the way Kabbalah speaks about is that in this empty space, there is no light of God over there. And now listen to this unbelievably beautiful teaching from Reb Nachman of Breslov in Likutei Maharan, the 64th Torah, where Reb Nachman speaks about the fact that I'm sure you all know that those people that have issues with God, that have problems with religion, and it's understandable, most of those people, the issues they have, the alienation they feel from God, come from questions about God. First of all, questions of philosophers, as Reb Nachman says, that the philosophers have a number of conundrums and questions that have a basis in wisdom, but that the human mind is incapable of answering them. Those are logical, philosophical questions, but I'm sure most people could relate more to the emotional questions that we ask. Where was God when I cried? Where was God when we suffered? How did God let it happen? Just a few weeks ago, I spent Shabbos with my great uncle, Reb Avrumi Zeltzer, who was one of the last remaining Auschwitz survivors. And he told me that he remembers the Friday night he got back to Kiryai Helmets, the town where my whole family is from, in Slovakia. He got back from Auschwitz to Kiryai Helmets. It was a Friday night. And he didn't know who was alive. And when he got back to Helmets, he found out that his mother was killed in Auschwitz, and some of his sisters, and a brother. And he walked into the house, and my great-grandfather, his father, my great-uncle's father, my great-grandfather, Reb Baruch Zeltzer, was in the middle of singing Shalom Aleichem. And Avrumi said that he realized that his father, this Reb Baruch Zeltzer, my great-grandfather, had lost a wife and kids just a few months ago in Auschwitz. And he was standing there singing Shalom Aleichem. And my great-uncle said, he like looked at him, he said, and he said in Hungarian, he said, "You're singing Shalom Aleichem? After everything? You're just singing Shalom Aleichem, like everything's okay." And he stormed out of the house. He couldn't even look at his father. He had this question, the question of all questions, the emotional questions. And he told me, actually, Reb Avrumi, that his older brother, Reb Hershu Zeltzer, Zecheinu Levracha, wanted to go get him, wanted to stop him. And his father, my great-grandfather, told his son Hershu, Lazim Gain, let him go. He'll come back. Let him be. Let him live with the question. Don't try to answer that question. Let him be. Don't try to convince Avrumi. Because, you know, the worst thing when we have these emotional questions is when people give these stupid answers and try to answer these questions. And we know how fake these answers often are. And how these people that try to give these answers themselves are just trying to like earn brownie points in God's eyes. We know that these emotional questions, there are no answers for them. And Reb Nachman of Breslov says that that's true. That there are so many questions in the world that there are no answers for, legitimate questions. And Reb Nachman says it is impossible to answer these questions. So Reb Nachman says, you know why? Because these questions come from the halal, from the vacated space in which, so to speak, there is no godliness. There is no light of God. Reb Nachman says there's absolutely no way that one can ever find an answer for these questions that come from that state, from the aspect of emptiness, of the vacated space, the makom panui, where there's no way to find God there, because it's emptiness. It's empty of God's light. For if God were found there as well, it wouldn't be vacated, and there would be no possibility for there to be creation. And Reb Nachman says that the secret of this vacated space will be revealed when Mashiach comes. But Reb Nachman gives a glimpse and a taste of it now, where he says something absolutely unbelievable. Where he teaches, if emptiness is the foundation of creation, and emptiness is the source of so much pain, and almost and all pain and suffering, really, how could there ever be healing? Well, Mashiach will bring that healing. But Reb Nachman gives a taste now. Says Reb Nachman, that emptiness, that vacated space, if we have faith, and believe the truth that that emptiness and vacated space is also God. But that's a paradox. It's the ultimate paradox. We're saying it's empty. It's called an empty space where God's light is not there. But says Reb Nachman, that the truth is that God is certainly there as well. But he's there as emptiness, not as presence. The emptiness itself is a way that God manifests. The secret of the healing is not to try to find presence. It's by knowing that emptiness is him too. Now that doesn't make sense. Which is it? Is he there or is he not there? No, he's not there. It's a void. Makom panui, chalal, it's an empty space. Empty of him. And that emptiness is him too. In the Chabad Svarim, in Chassidus Chabad, this is known as the secret of Hashem Hu HaElikim, Havaya Hu HaElikim, which in English is translated as God is the Lord, which is a pretty lousy translation. But we're about to going to say this seven times at Ni'ilah on Yom Kippur. Hashem Yudke Vavke, the four-letter name, Hu HaElikim. We actually say it every single day in Aleinu. Ve'adata Hayom, you should know this day, Ki Hashem Hu HaElikim. Yudke Vavke, Havaya is the name of God of the revelation of His infinite light. Elohim is the name of contraction and concealment and emptiness where he removes himself. And Havaya Hu Elohim means that the emptiness, concealment itself is part of Havaya, is part of God's infinity. Like a turtle whose shell is part of itself, the secret is not to try to seek presence by filling oneself with light, by running away from the pain, from the emptiness. The secret is to feel that the emptiness itself is Him, is presence. The tool, the greatest tool to deal with the issues, the pain, with the emptiness, is not to try to fill it immediately. I mean, eventually one should and could try to go beyond it and heal in a way of goodness and open revealed goodness, and we hope for that time as well. But the ultimate healing is in the here and now, at that time of emptiness and pain, not to try to fill it, but to feel the emptiness as Him, as a way that He's manifesting. And Reb Nachman says, Reb Nachman Breslov says, that that's why these questions don't have answers, because the questions themselves come from the empty space. Do you understand? The questions themselves are God manifesting as emptiness. The questions don't have answers. It's not that we don't figure out, that we can't figure out the answers. These questions, these philosophical and emotional questions that are bothering so much, they don't have answers. Because the questions are Him. They're Him manifesting as emptiness, as the darkness. When Mashiach comes, it's not that we're going to get an answer. It's we're going to feel that He was manifesting as the questions, as that emptiness. In truth, God is there in the emptiness. The emptiness is a part of Him, like the snail is a part of the turtle. And I think that this is the secret of Rav Kook's poetry of longing. Rav Kook wrote so much poetry about longing, because I believe the secret of the longing is to know that in the longing and the yearning itself is the presence of the one for whom one longs. I often wonder, as one of the saddest anecdotes in Jewish history is that story of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, who everyone knows was the greatest lover of Zion. He dreamed his whole life of going to the Promised Land, the land of Israel. He wrote the most beautiful poetry of longing for Zion. And the famous legend goes that when he finally reached Jerusalem, when he left Spain, and after so many decades of yearning, he reached Jerusalem. As soon as he came to the Kotel, he was run down by an Arab horseman and killed. And it's always bothered me, that anecdote. How could God do that? But then I understood that this is the secret of why so many Jews spent their entire lives waiting for Mashiach. Because the yearning and the waiting themselves are presence. The problem is when we spend our lives waiting and we want the waiting to go away. We want the waiting to end. We want the issue to go away. We run away from it. We run away from the yearning. We're looking to fill the emptiness. But healing comes from knowing that the waiting itself is God. The waiting for Mashiach is the secret of redemption. There's a famous quote from Nietzsche in his Beyond Good and Evil. And if thou gaze long into an abyss, the abyss will also gaze into thee. If thou gaze long into an abyss, the abyss will also gaze into thee. The longinger of Cook's poetry is gazing into the abyss. And when gazing into the abyss gazes into thee. In the longing is presence. In the yearning is healing. Listen to this other poem of Rav Kook. We're going to learn now another poem from Rav Kook that says this idea so clearly. It's from the beginning of the fourth volume of Oiras HaKodesh, of Lights of Holiness. Listen to the words of Rav Kook. When irrepressible is the heart's longing and yearning, the soul is thirsty for God, and the pain itself is exceedingly wonderful. The suffering is pangs of love, faithful wounds of a lover. A multitude of oceans roar in the soul's depth. Tremendous streams of awe, of love, of return, of desire and panting for the living rock, for the living God, flow inside her. And when the rivers hidden under these streams shall open, therein will be found massive wellsprings filled with holy wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. Blessed is the nation for whom is such. Blessed is the nation that God is their Lord. What does Rav Kook mean? The pain itself is exceedingly wonderful. When the heart's longing and yearning is irrepressible and the soul is thirsty for God, the pain itself is exceedingly wonderful. Gam hamachov ba'atzmo nehadar hu me'od. Because Rav Kook says this pain, the pain of longing, is the faithful wounds of a lover. It's the surest feeling that the beloved is present. The emptiness is presence. And I always understood that that's why the whole month of Tishrei, all the holidays of the month of Tishrei, which are all the month, it's a month all about healing and repentance, there's such a focus on emptiness. The shofar in Rosh Hashanah only comes min ha-meitzar, from constriction, from a hollow, empty horn. Yom Kippur, we spend the whole day pounding our chest, carving out an emptiness in our heart, emptying our heart. And then finally the sukkah, the halal of the sukkah, that's the word that the sages use, the halal, the empty space of the sukkah that we sit in. It's all about feeling that the emptiness itself is God. That's the source of healing. Knowing that the questions themselves are God, the emptiness itself is Him. And next time when we're overcome, nobody should know from Minhag HaGedacht, but if Chalila anyone is overcome with pain, with suffering, with questions, with horrible feelings, of course one has to pray and hope for the dawn. But at night, feel that the pain and the void and the emptiness itself is Him. And as Reb Nachman Breslov and all the holy books say, when Mashiach comes, we'll appreciate and feel why it had to be such a way, that the emptiness itself is Him. But that is that revelation, and that is where healing comes from. To have that courage, to sing songs of longing, To read the poetry of longing of Rav Kook is to know that the longing for Zion is a way of life, is life. Blessed is the nation for whom is such. Blessed is the nation that God is their Lord, that lives a life of irrepressible longing and yearning, of thirst for God, and knowing that the thirst itself is the deepest feeling of God Himself in us. May He satisfy our thirst for His light. May He shine His face indeed upon us, that we shall be saved.